All right, I'm going to. we've exceeded our hour at this point, so I'm going. I know you've got more stories, and I think there's probably people out there who've got better questions than I've got. So I'm going to say, okay, let's stop right now, and we're going to open it up to questions for a while. So there's Melissa. She's got a microphone, and go ahead over there in the corner. We got a question.
Would you compare the Hellcat and the Corsair and touch on why the Corsair served after the end of the war and the Hellcat didn't?
Say that one more time.
Would you compare the Hellcat and the Corsair and touch on why the Corsair continued service after the war and the Hellcat didn't?
Ah. Who's the
you
expert?
Fly them both, yeah.
Steve's got that one.
Early on in the when they were building the Hellcat, the Corsair actually flew right around the same time, but the Corsair had it was delayed in getting carrier qualified. You hear a lot of horror stories about the long nose on the Corsair, which impeded visibility getting onto the deck. And the Hellcat's quite opposite of that. The ground handling's phenomenal. You can see over the nose real easy. I think it was a better initial platform for guys during carrier landing. So that's why you saw the Hellcat more predominantly in that 44 era of the war. Once they started getting those issues sorted out with the Corsair, bigger engines, of course. The Corsair airframe was a little better suited to adapt over time. The Hellcat was obviously based on the Wildcat, but it was built quickly to go do a certain mission, and the Corsair lended itself to, again, adapting over time. So I think that's why you saw the Corsair later on in the war. Once it got carrier qualled, it could carry a little more armament. It was a little heavier set that way, and then the engines that they continued to put on the aircraft, a four-bladed prop in the -4 Corsair, and then ultimately in Korea. They built Corsairs in the 1950s with the -7. So to answer your question, I think once the quirks were worked out of the Corsair and it became a pilot-friendly airplane, the aircraft lent itself better to adapt over time than the Hellcat did.
I'd add one thing to that. The Hellcat had a 19-1 kill ratio. The Corsair was 16-1, so that was great for both of them.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. All right, other questions out there? Nobody?
There's one. Oh,
all right, we got one here.
What was your rate coming back to the boat?
How was that?
Your rate coming back to the boat, as in, if you've launched?
Which wire did you catch?
Oh, which wire? Okay, which wire on the Essex would you try to catch? How many wires were there? There's four now.
Yeah, there's four wires, and okay. And you kind of aim for the second one, and most of the time that the landing signal officer handles that. They bring you in about 7 knots above stalling speed, and of course when he gives you the cut, you chop the throttle, and it's pretty well ready to stall, so it comes down. And I might add to that, people wonder, why in the world do you need a signal officer? Well, basically, it's because of the pitch of the deck. The ocean is hardly ever calm, so that deck is always moving, and you can tell it a little bit, when you're flying in, but basically when you make that last tight turn into the groove, you have your goggles over your eyes, you have your head kind of outside so nothing obstructs, and you watch him. You never look at your gauges, and you'll tell by his paddles where you're high or low, and he brings you in.
How was your night landing?
The night landing?
Yeah, your one night landing, how did you do?
Actually, it went reasonably well. I was a little concerned, but it went well.
Got a question about the Combat Air Patrol. How many planes in the Combat Air Patrol, and how far out from the carrier did you fly, and how long did you loiter in the area?
You know, I can't give you a figure on that, but they shot down quite a lot of them. But I have to give our gunners on our ships a whole lot of credit, too. I've seen them a lot, shoot down a lot of them. In fact, on the Essex, I happened to be on board one day, and they reported that we had a Japanese Zero diving on us, and the anti-aircraft gun damaged one wing. So it just missed the deck, and it was carrying what they estimated was a 1,000-pound bomb. And I tell you, it just felt like it raised that carrier up out of the water and dropped it back in. I mean, it was and it did make a crack in the hull, but they patched that on the go. We stayed right with the fleet.
Don did say, by the way, you know, a typical mission in terms of hours. How long did you fly on a typical mission?
What was that? You know,
how long was a typical mission? You know?
Okay, a typical mission, most generally for us, was 3.5 hours. I was looking at my logbook here a while back, and there was five times, I think, that I flew a five-hour flight. I had two missions. It was 5.3. That's kind of long on a sitting on a parachute pack.
All right, more questions.
How much fuel would you normally land or come back from a mission in time and duration? For instance, did you have an hour and a half remaining in fuel when you returned to the deck?
You left.
How much gas did you have left when you came back? Were you out of gas most of the time when you came back, or were you out of ammo when you came back?
Not really. Not very often, anyway. Most generally, if we weren't carrying belly tanks, well, then we weren't flying probably over 150 miles. So, if we got delayed or something, well, we'd still have enough. When we go on our long missions, well, then we'd carry the belly tank. And the one thing you had to be a little careful, try to conserve going and coming, you know, because you never know what's going to happen to it. Because, yeah, like, for instance, aircraft carriers will not turn into the wind till that one or two planes. They have a certain time that they're going to turn into the wind to land, because when they go to land airplanes, they have to lock into a straight course. And, of course, that makes them vulnerable to attack. So if you're getting low on fuel and your plane isn't taking landing planes, then you pick out another carrier that is, if there is one. If not, when you run out, you land in the ocean.
Okay, another one up here.
Sir, thank you for your service. And after the war, could you tell us a little bit about what you did after the war, and did you ever fly again?
He said, what did you do? He wants to know about your farming experience. After the war, he wanted to know, did you ever fly again?
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you know, I kind of wanted to make a career out of the Navy, but there was 26 of ensigns aboard the Essex, and I only know one out of the 26 that in a year, almost year's time, that had advanced in rank beforehand, why they had advanced like in maybe 4 to 5 months. But the supply, you know, that's on supply and demand, and so they hadn't seen fit. So I decided, well, I knew what would happen. I could go home and buy a half interest in my dad's farming operation, because he's getting toward the age that he'd be thinking about retiring. And so I did that. Well, then probably about 10 years after that, the rural carrier position with the Postal Service came open, and there were 28 of us that took the test, and somehow I was lucky enough to get chosen, and so I ended up carrying mail for 30 years, Postal Service, and farming also.
So you never know if your mail carrier happened to win the Distinguished Flying Cross. I'm just here to say, you know. So. All right, with that, Ensign McPherson.
Thank you.
I have to say thank you. It has been an absolute honor to have you here, to hear your stories. Thank you so much for your service and allowing us to be here and do what we do here.
Yeah.
And Evan and Steve, thanks so much for your inputs also. And I got to say, Ron and Diane Fagan right there, if you want to congratulate these two. It's their airplane. It's their museum, Granite Falls, Minnesota. Go visit. It is absolutely spectacular. I think every airplane you got up there flies too, doesn't it? Yes, it does. So we'll wrap this up. We're going to hang around here. These are the experts, and you can ask some questions. But I'll just say now again, thank you very much, gentlemen. It has been an absolute honor and pleasure. And you guys fly safe out there, okay?
Yeah. Thank you, Ed.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.